very special thanks to our $5 fans, Andrew Anker, Carl Nelson, Stephen Fox, David McCreath, Brendan Atkins, Lucius Kwok, Brian Walsh, Liam Campbell, Gregory Barbosa, Gregory Barbosa, Liam Campbell, and Brian Walsh.
This week's Let's Make Mistakes is brought to you by Adobe Typekit. Thank you, Adobe Typekit. What was that?
What was that?
There were like, that was like the same names over and over.
Some people donated $5 multiple and like, you know, $10.
Great. I'm glad we have a system for that.
Yeah. Well, you know.
How are you, Jesse?
I'm well. I'm busy. Good busy.
I'm good busy too. We have a guest with us today.
We sure do.
We actually delivered on the guest that we promised last week.
Did we promise again? I don't remember anything from last week. I think that I was blacked out.
Okay. We have Dan Maul with us today. Say hello, Dan.
Hi, everybody.
Hello.
Hello.
So, Dan, for those listeners who may not be familiar with who you are and what you do, can you give us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. My name is Dan Maul. I run a design collaborative out of Philadelphia called Super Friendly. And it's a remote team, so we've got people all around, all over the place. And before that, I was a design director at an agency in Brooklyn called Big Spaceship. And then prior to that, I helped to start the Philadelphia office of a web design shop called Happy Cog.
I've heard of Happy Cog.
I've heard of all of those things.
Some people have, yeah.
Well, you know, it's industry people.
Yeah, you know, inside stuff.
Inside baseball.
So why did you start your own thing? Because Jesse and I think that's nuts.
It is nuts.
As people who've started our own thing.
Yeah, it is nuts. But I had kids, which was also nuts. And I just wanted to be home with them. And I thought it was pretty rude to ask an agency to let me be home all the time and not be in the office. So I figured I would just try it out and see how it goes. And now I get to stay at home and go to the park on nice days and see my family and also do work with cool clients.
Can you talk about some of the cool clients that you've done work with?
I can, yeah. I can't talk about too much that I'm working on right now, but the last year or so has been really cool. Done some work for TechCrunch. We helped to launch a new site for TechCrunch. We also worked on some stuff for Entertainment Weekly, doing some mobile work for them. So the TechCrunch site is at techcrunch.com. The Entertainment Weekly stuff is at m.ew.com.
Ew.com.
Ewgross.com. Mm-hmm. And
Mew.com, because it's the mobile one.
Yeah. That's right. And then at the end of last year, we helped launch a new site for Grantland for all the loyal Grantland readers out there. So working on some good stuff. Most of it is kind of publishing redesign stuff. But then there's also a couple of design sprints here and there that we work on with startups that need a little bit of design help or a little bit of a boost. And things are good. Things are fun.
That sounds awesome. And as an avid reader of Grantland, I really appreciate that redesign.
Awesome. I'm glad to hear it.
You guys did a great job.
Thanks. There was a good team on that. So we worked with, we had our team. We sort of worked on all the front end stuff. And then we worked with a back end WordPress shop called TenUp. And they did all the WordPress implementation for it.
Did you meet Bill?
What's that?
Did you meet Bill?
No, unfortunately not. He was supposed to come to the kickoff meeting and then he bailed last minute. So we were just stuck with other people. I was really looking forward to meeting him, but alas, we never actually got to meet him.
Damn, that's too bad.
I know. I really wanted to, but to no avail.
Oh, well. So, we've met in person, I think, once, right?
Yeah, in Seattle. I took a really creepy picture of you. Yeah, trying to grope Jeffrey Zeldman.
Well, I mean, are there any pictures of Mike that are not, like, by virtue of what they are?
Don't
like,
even finish. Don't. Just.
Sorry.
Don't.
I don't have any, so.
I'm just simplifying, Mike. Just simplifying.
I know. It doesn't always, it's not always in my best interest when you simplify my actions.
Well, it's not all about you. It's about the users, the listeners.
There's only, never mind. Dan, did we get in a fight on Twitter last week?
Well, you said it wasn't a fight, and I didn't think it was a fight.
I know, but now we're on the radio, so and we want to make it exciting.
Oh, well, then of course we were in a fight.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
It was terrible.
I missed this. Can you guys tell me what you fought about?
Do you want to start, Mike?
God, I don't remember. I only remember my last fight.
What was your last fight? How many fights do you have?
I try to have less, but... stupid Game of Thrones fight.
It sounds like it was worth it.
Well, I could tell you about our Twitter fight.
Tell me about our Twitter fight, and then we'll talk about our Game of Thrones fight.
All right, deal. So I don't know how it started, actually. We probably should have looked this up. I'll do that in the meantime. But I tweeted about spec work, and because I was writing a proposal at the time. And I was thinking about it, and I was putting a lot of thought into this proposal, as I normally do, or as I pretend that I normally do. And I was thinking, man, for all the thought and the value that I'm putting into this proposal, this is stuff that I should be getting paid for.
Oh, yeah, you wanted to get paid for writing proposals.
I do, yeah. Well, and then I was thinking, well, you know, our industry gets all up in arms about spec work. And, you know, there are times where I could do a comp in 2 hours.
Right.
And the amount of time that I could put, you know, the amount of time that I put into a comp, sometimes I put way more time into a proposal. So why does our industry get all up in arms about getting paid for, you know, a 2-hour Photoshop comp? But no, I haven't heard anybody say anything about spec work. I'm sorry, about proposals. So I just sort of put it out on Twitter as like, I wonder what everybody thinks of this, or I wonder if anybody's ever talked about this before. And then it turned into a Twitter fight.
Okay, so it actually really wasn't a fight.
Just to clarify.
No, I wouldn't fight with Dan.
I know.
No,
you wouldn't? Yeah.
So I explained that, in my opinion, proposals are a cost of doing business. And they're a pain in the ass to write. And they're the thing that you have to write so that the client believes that you're the right person to do this job. And I also agree with Dan that it's hell of a lot easier to just make a comp sometimes.
Yeah.
But, and this is the problem with all spec work, it's done without the benefit of any sort of research or organizational understanding or any of that crap. So it becomes a, look, I made you this thing. I hope you like it. Now pay me for it.
Yeah. I mean, I have some, I am a person who writes proposals all the time. I can talk about this.
Okay.
There have been times where I agree making a proposal is so much work. It is so much work that it's like, oh my God, like why am I spending 2 weeks trying to do this proposal?
Why are you spending 2 weeks doing a proposal?
Yeah. So what I found or what I don't know, I guess what I decided is that if it takes longer than like a couple days to make a proposal, it's probably because you don't know enough about the project to be able to propose something that is accurate.
That's certainly one reason. Another reason could be like, are you perhaps replying to an RFP that has been overly complicated by the client?
Yeah. But I guess what I mean is what I've started doing for some things where it's just like, say for a large, like, you know, large for us is something that's maybe more than 3 months.
Right.
So say like I'm trying to make a proposal for a 6 to 9 month project. It is very unlikely that without doing any work, I really can like accurately know what that 6 to 9 months is going to look like. So what I've been doing recently is starting off with like kickoff / discovery projects that are paid,
right,
and using that month or two to buy myself more time to kind of make a proposal under the nice umbrella of paychecks from clients.
That's a smart strategy.
So that's, yeah. I mean, that's one thing. And that's for when the amount of time that I'm spending on the proposal is significant, right? Like, I think that if you're just spending an afternoon or a couple of days, you know, like a couple hours maybe spread over a couple of days kind of begrudgingly typing in paragraphs for somebody, that's like cost of business.
Right.
And that's fine. But there are ones where it's just like, I have to have discussions with each member of my team to talk about like our projections for the next 6 months and like actually do basically audits on people's applications to even understand how to scope it out. And that's when I think that like, I understand that it's, you kind of are doing spec work.
Hold on a second.
There's a difference here between spec work and the cost of doing business.
Yeah.
We can come back to that. Sorry, you go, Dan.
Yes, I totally agree with you. And yes, let's come back to that. Ideally, the way that I want it to work, and I think the way that a lot of us want it to work, is a client comes in that really loves us, and they're totally sold on working with us.
Oh, who cares if they love us? Come on, we got to get off of that shit.
Because it makes it easier. Right? Because if they're like, we want to work with you, draft up a statement of work, and let's get to business.
What happens if a client loves you and you're the absolute wrong person to do a job?
Wait, what did you say that again?
What happens if a client loves you and you're the absolute wrong person to do a job?
I think we find that out. And I love to be ethical about that. So if we find out on the first day that we're not the right fit, and ideally we start that before we have a long-term commitment, we find that out when we're dating as a project, then that's cool. Then we say, you know what? We're actually not the right team for you. We'll give your money back. You know, the stuff that you paid for is actually stuff value that you didn't get. I'm all for clients paying for value. And if they're not getting value out of hiring us, then they shouldn't pay for that stuff.
Amen.
They are getting value out of it, yeah, you should pay us for that.
The reason I reacted so strongly to that is because I have a huge problem. Well, actually, there are a lot of designers out there who measure their value against emotional reassurance from clients.
Oh, I can't, like that's too hard for me to talk about right now.
How?
Like, it's just I just.
Talk to me, Jesse.
No, it's just that I experience so much of that. Being a person who works with designers, I have to externally experience that emotional roller coaster, and those existential crises from other people.
Oh, poor Jesse.
I don't want to talk about it.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
I mean, it's fine. It's a thing that I can. I have empathy for, because I understand that like you want to derive value out of the work that you do, and that's great. That's all. I can't talk about it.
Can you imagine a doctor refusing or not wanting to give you bad news because they thought you might not like them anymore? Or because they thought you might be upset at them? So I'm just going to give them good news today. I'm not going to tell them the bad stuff. Yeah. I don't want them leaving here crying.
Yeah.
This is a job. This is our profession, our craft.
Yeah.
We can't decide what to say to our clients and what not to say to our clients and what to put in front of them and not put in front of them based on the emotional response that they might have.
Yeah.
And whether they might like us or not like us. That's not a project goal ever.
Yeah, that's so expectations based though. Like I used to work at the Apple store as a Mac genius. So there were other people like salespeople, but the other kind of like the other track that like maybe a salesperson would go into if you don't become like a genius is to become something called a creative, which I think is kind of funny now. Those are the people.
Fuck me now.
So geniuses are like who you go to if your hard drive is broken. Right. And then creatives are the ones who are just like, they'll teach you how to use iPhoto. And so it was always funny because like the people who are going to the creatives are people who are there because like they just want to learn and like they're happy to be there. And the people that go to the geniuses are the people who are so angry that this $2,000 machine that they bought like is making a clicking noise and like it's all coming down on me. And so it was always funny just like listening to the complaints of the creatives versus the complaints of the geniuses, because the complaints of the creatives were just like, my client showed up 2 minutes late, and then they expected us to go 2 minutes over. I cannot believe that this 80-year-old lady expected that of me. I didn't get a coffee break today or something like that. And geniuses is just like, well, somebody tried throwing something in my face. They called me every single kind of bad word they could call a person. And then they yelled at the manager. I don't know. Like, it was just – that's kind of what I expected. out of my job. The creatives expected sunshine and home-baked cookies out of theirs. So I think designers have that creative syndrome a little bit sometimes where they expect praise out of their jobs.
They work for praise.
They work for praise. But I mean, I also see people with a sense of entitlement for that praise. Like, they should recognize that I am amazing. Why are they not recognizing that?
Right.
So.
Anyway, hi, Dan.
Hi. Sorry.
I'm like raising my hands and saying amen to all this stuff because I just don't, I just really, it doesn't resonate with me, the idea that designers need to be coddled and put on a pedestal somewhere, like they capture ideas from magical cloud and bring it down to the people. Like you said, Mike, it's a job. We work hard at doing it, and you know that there shouldn't be a sense of entitlement.
Yeah,
you know, we do our job just like everybody else.
Mm-hmm. What were we trying to talk about again? Your Twitter fight.
So we were. So proposals.
Yeah. Well,
let me ask you. Jesse, so go ahead.
The point that Jesse brought up about doing a discovery process, I think that's. That's really good, and doing a paid one. I think mm-hmm. that's awesome, and a lot of people responded with that. And I do that as often as I can, you know. But you need some amount of conversation to even get a client to pay you for a discovery process.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
Sort of like commented in jest, like, I don't have an autoresponder that says, you know, when somebody emails us and says, hey, can you do work? I don't have an autoresponder that says, cool, deposit money into this account, and then we'll start to talk to you.
Mm-hmm. So Dan, walk me through this a little bit. So I go to Super Friendly. Mm-hmm. I say, hey, I want to work with you. What do mm-hmm. you, I maybe describe my project a little bit.
Yep.
What do you do next?
So I've got a bunch of questions I have generally, and I think it's of most projects that I have. And it's the tendency that I see for people that contact Super Friendly is that there are certain questions that they just don't answer outright, probably because they don't know that they need to answer those questions.
Hold on a sec. Hold on. Mm-hmm. Am I finding these questions on your website?
You absolutely are. There's a post that I wrote called Pre-Qualifying Clients.
Okay.
And those are generally the questions that I like to ask. And in that post, I wrote what questions I ask, and I also wrote about what I look for in their answers.
Okay.
So I asked them questions like, who on your team is on this project, is going to be on this project if we work together? Is it going to be you? Is it going to be a whole marketing team? Is it going to be some new guy that you just hired? And I'm looking for a specific answer from that question, but I'm also looking for what they mean by that answer as well. So if they say, yeah, we just hired this new guy, he doesn't really have anything to do, but so we figured we would just throw this project at him. That probably means that the project's not terribly important to them. Now, we could be wrong about that, but the tendency is that project's not important to their company. That means they might not want to spend a lot on it. That means that they might not see value out of it, even if we're doing really hard work and good work for them. So a lot of those questions are for me to kind of figure out whether they're a good fit to work with us. You know, culture-wise, and this is something that I picked up at HappyCog, and Greg Hoy says this all the time there, where they've got a questionnaire that they have people fill out, or at least when I was there, that was what we did. We had a questionnaire that people fill out, and it was a Word document that had a bunch of questions and then answers filled in that said answer here. And if you get that document back and it's just a bunch of answer here still left in the document, I mean, that's a sign that they might not, that's the level of effort they might put into the actual project.
What
now, of course,
if,
it's just speculation, but yeah.
What if they just don't know how to answer those?
I think, you know, and this is kind of a tough one because it's hard to kind of put this through the proposal interpreter machine and then say, yes, this client will be a good client to work with or not. I think, and maybe I'll get crucified for this, but I think that we've been doing this long enough that you can sort of smell some of those signs. You know, you get an email back and you're like, I got a bad feeling about this client. And
I heard that HappyCog just orders bacon from their clients to see if they're... Yes. That was like the smelling a good client thing. Sorry, I was just...
Yeah,
that
was,
I just heard about it.
So are we expecting our clients to know as much about the design process as we do?
I don't. Okay. And I try not to. I think sometimes I fall into that trap. But I expect them to know as much about their business and what they want as I do about design.
Okay, that's fair. So is the questionnaire mostly about their business?
Yes. A lot of it is about their business. So sometimes it's about, and it's about kind of the intersection of their business and my business, because that's what we're doing, right? We're doing something together. And that together thing is me being a really good designer and putting together a really good team for them for what they want. And it's about them knowing their business well enough to know that this thing that we're going to make together is going to succeed, and they're not going to throw a bunch of money down the drain.
When do you ask them about budget?
What's that?
When do you ask them about budget?
It's close to the end, but not quite the end. I don't really like ending on budget, and I don't really like starting with budget either. So it's sort of buried in the middle there. And I usually ask them what kind of budget they have allocated. Sometimes I ask that in a couple of different ways. One is just, you know, what do you guys want to spend on this project? Do you have a number in mind? And generally the answer is, no, we just want to see what you come back with. Mm-hmm. And I don't like that answer because it doesn't give me a lot to work with. So generally I ask them, well, you know, if we could ballpark it, would it be closer to $5,000 or $50,000 or $500,000? And they would say, oh, no, definitely not $500,000. You know, and then, okay, well, now we have a ballpark. Now we know it's less than $500,000. And that gives us something to work with. You know, it's closer than we were before. So I try to like use the budget question as target practice. I want to see how close we can get. Some clients will say, yeah, we'd love it to be between 200K and 300K. And great, now we know what we can scope to. Now we know how much time we could spend on a project. Now we know sort of what the parameters are. Mm-hmm. But a lot of those questions are to get at that. Now, some clients, when they say they want to spend several hundred thousand dollars, for some people that's great, but for certain clients, that's throwaway money. You know, and so just because they're willing to spend a lot of money doesn't mean that the project is valuable to them. So that's what the other questions are there for, to figure out if there's actually value that's more than just what the dollar amount indicates.
I mean, I used to run Pissed Up at Mule, so I should know the answer to this question that I'm about to ask. But how have you guys been approaching budgeting stuff lately with clients? Like, have you changed it at all, or is it still pretty much a spoken conversation?
Us?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, we try to get the budget as soon as possible.
Yeah.
And we don't have, I mean, I think I believe we have a questionnaire online, and the only question is, do you like dogs?
Nice.
Yeah.
Why do you ask that?
Because somebody who doesn't like dogs is untrustworthy, and I don't want to work with them.
I don't like dogs, but I got bit by a dog as a kid. Mm. I'm scarred. So I guess it's not that I don't like dogs, but I just...
How would you answer it on a form? Would you say no?
I would write that. I would write, I don't have anything against dogs, but a dog at one point had something against me.
What kind of dog was it?
I don't know. I don't even remember. I've tried to block it out.
Okay. Probably not a chug.
So I would write down, you know, emotionally scarred.
Yeah. Damaged.
Yeah. Damaged.
We have a little, like a short form with, I think that like we require name and email address, and then the other ones are not required, but since they're there, they are suggested. Right. We have a little drop down menu now with like, smaller firm, so we're working with smaller numbers. We have like a less than $5,000, 5 to 10, 10 to 20.
Yeah.
So, and that's nice because at least when people click on that drop down, obviously less than $5,000 is just like, we're not going to, no, I'm just kidding.
Our goal is to get on the phone with somebody as soon as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I can have that goal because I've got a guy dedicated to doing just that.
Yeah. Which is nice.
Yeah. So I want to find out if your project is real. And we're going to find, I think the other question on the form is how did you hear about us?
I need to add that. I like that.
Because that'll, you know, that means we can go find stuff out about you.
Mm-hmm. One of my favorite ones that I ask that helps me learn about my business as opposed to theirs, which is partly why it's in there, is that I ask them who else they're talking to for the project. That helps me in two ways. A lot of times we pitch against friends, and a lot of times we actually ended up collaborating with friends because we asked that question. So, you know, we asked, you know, who are you guys talking to about that about this project? And they say, we're talking to this shop and this shop and this shop. And we say, oh, we're actually friends with them. Would you guys mind if we talked to them and figured out if we could collaborate on this project? And That's worked more than a couple times for us. So I like asking that. And then the other thing is it helps me to understand how they perceive my business. Mm-hmm. So sometimes when they say like, yeah, you're talking to you and a bunch of .NET CMS shops. Yeah. I'm like, oh, this is interesting company to be in. Yeah. Or when they say, you know, it's you and a bunch of, you know, advertising agencies that we're talking to. That helps me get a sense of what kind of work we are perceived as doing and what kind of work maybe we should continue to do or specifically try to stay away from in the way that we talk about our company, you know, at whatever conferences or blog posts or anything like that.
You also know that the advertising agencies will do spec work and at some point you'll be asked
to. I've won so much work by refusing to do spec and finding out later that those advertising agencies did spec that the client didn't like.
Same here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They shoot themselves in the foot every time.
Yeah, exactly.
The only time we ever did spec was paid spec work.
Still spec work.
Oh, we were not. The only reason we did it was because it was for like a big enough potential client to where we're just like, yeah, we've got this week open and they will pay us for this. Let's just do it. And it ended up just being like the worst experience ever, which is just like, this is a reminder of why we do not do spec, which was that like, they said that they wanted it by Friday. We gave it to them on Thursday. We didn't hear from them for 3 weeks.
Right.
Like,
So let's make sure that we define spec work before we get
That's probably a good
bunch
idea.
Of stupid angry tweets about this. Spec is short for speculative.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes. Yep.
It means I'm guessing at shit.
Mm-hmm.
It means I'm going to take my best guess at what you might want.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's right, then I have proved that I am a fantastic mind reader.
Mm-hmm.
not a designer, but a mind reader. And I don't want to build my business on how well I can read people's minds.
Yeah.
I want to build it on how well I can do design work.
Mm-hmm.
So I need to make sure that I'm doing design work for people, which means going in and finding out what the problem that they're asking me to solve is.
Mm-hmm.
So when somebody asks us to do spec work, I explain to them why, you know, why we don't do it. And more importantly, I explain to them the benefit of why we work the way we do and why that's in their best interest financially.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're going to waste a lot of time and a lot of money dealing with all of this speculative crap. And the person who makes the thing that they believe might be the right thing,
mm-hmm.
like I said, did it on guesswork. Who the hell knows whether these are the right people to extend out an entire design system for you?
Yeah.
Like I said, they haven't proven themselves to be good designers. They've proven themselves to be great mind readers.
Mm-hmm.
Mind readers do not a design system make.
Mind readers are not designers are not mind readers. Those are like mentalists, right?
So, do you really want to put like a $300,000 budget in the hands of somebody who might just have happened to get to be able to read your mind?
Yeah. And I think that like sometimes people ask that so that they can see like your design style, which is what portfolios are for. I always love to point that out.
But my portfolio is a record of things that I've done for other people.
Mm-hmm.
Of problems that I've solved for them.
Thoughtfully solved.
And I've had to tell clients like, your solution is not in this portfolio that you're looking at.
Yeah.
This is filled with other people's solutions.
Mm-hmm.
The last time I did spec work was, I don't know, like five years ago. That was the last time. We did a pitch, which we won. For the pitch, we did 96 comps.
Jesus Christ.
What?
How we won the pitch. We won the pitch, and then as we were working on the project, we realized that half of the budget for the project actually had just gone into the work that we did for the pitch. We lost half the money because we spent so much time trying to win the stupid project.
That's insane.
Yeah.
And that was the last time I ever did spec work. I was like, this is so silly. There's no need for this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the last times we were asked to do spec, I did know the names of the other agencies involved. They were friends. And I was just like, hey, guys, let's all tell them no. We all did. And then like a month later, the CEO of said company was asked to leave and the whole project dissolved. So it's like, whoa. Well, good thing we all walked away from that one, right?
Yeah, we did dodge that one.
Yeah.
Hey, Dan.
Well, because I love pedantry, Mike, you defined spec work. So I'm going to define proposals.
Okay.
And it's pretty evident by the word.
Before you do that,
but
hold on a second. Before you define proposals,
uh-huh.
I want to take a minute here to thank our sponsors at Adobe Typekit.
Thanks,
for,
Adobe Typekit.
For sponsoring
Typekit.
Us today. Do you use Typekit, Dan?
Absolutely. I love Typekit. I love the selection of faces that they have. I love the people that work there. They're just so nice.
It's
an easy service.
Do you know that
it's an easy thing to use.
Do you know that it's not just for the web anymore?
I do. I do know this. And I make good use of that Creative Cloud desktop sync thingy.
And they have new fonts.
New fonts?
New fonts.
New
I thought they had all the fonts you could have, but no. Apparently they got even more fonts.
Even more.
I want them to partner with every foundry so that anytime I buy typefaces from any foundry,
yes.
They just sync to Typekit. That would be the greatest.
I think that's a part of their grand scheme, right? It's got to be.
I think they're well on their way to that.
Yeah. And what you said, yes, all of the people at Typekit are so nice. That's the thing that we don't – do we mention that when they sponsor us, how wonderful those people are?
They really are nice people.
Yeah. I know that it's like Adobe, so it's just like, down with a man, but the people –
Don't say that during the sponsor read.
No, but they're wonderful people.
Sorry, Libby.
No, I'm not – I have nothing against Adobe. That is what my business runs on.
Digging it deeper.
We all run off of Adobe.
That's right. That's true.
And the Adobe Updater.
And, oh, Jesus Christ. Seriously?
Just edit it out in post.
During a sponsor read?
That's how people know we're being honest.
I would like to thank Adobe Typekit for their continued sponsorship of our show, and I hope they know how much we appreciate it. And I hope all of our listeners go and try Typekit. You can try it for free. There are thousands and thousands and thousands of fonts that you can use both on the web and on your desktop.
It's beautiful and it's easy to use.
It is both of those things and more.
And it's not just for the web anymore.
So Dan, tell us about proposals.
Yes. So, oh, by the way, on the Adobe note, I even used Adobe Flash this morning. I opened it and I prototyped with it and I loved it.
So we know Dan is a time machine.
You prototype in Flash?
I do.
Hey, the sponsor read is over now, so.
We are not sponsored by Flash.
Yeah, right. This podcast is sponsored by Macromedia. Yes, proposals. So in a proposal, you should be proposing something, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things that's part of the reason that I tweeted what I did was I was like, how much should I be proposing right now? There's a bunch that I don't know.
Right.
There's some that I do know from having conversations with the client and from emailing back and forth and asking certain things. So what's the line of what I should be proposing in there?
Right.
And the proposal that I was writing at the time was a project for a big company that we're pitching to do a website redesign for. And the proposal is full of, we don't know yet, but we're going to find out when we get there. And,
right.
And I almost got sick of writing that. I just couldn't figure out more different ways to write that. But that's what the proposal was. It was, we're going to do this. We're going to propose this process of working, of finding out the things that we don't know, but we're not actually proposing a solution to you.
Right.
And I think a lot of people expect in proposals, they expect to either be writing or receiving, this is what we're going to make.
Right.
And
so
my proposals are just full of, well, we don't know what we're going to make yet. That's what we're going to find out. We're proposing to do these things in order to find that out.
So we have a saying here. That a proposal, there should be nothing surprising in a proposal. A proposal is just the reiteration of conversations that have already happened between you and the prospective client.
That's really nice.
So
I like that.
We get, write it down. So we get on the phone with people And we want to get on the phone with people as soon as we possibly can. And I mean, if they're local, we'll go hang out with them and stuff. And, you know, we talk to them about the process. We talk to them about why it works. We talk to them about, you know, they talk to us about their goals and their needs and their capabilities. And we see if there's a fit there. And if there is, then we start talking about, okay, so how should we attack this thing? And we, you know, start getting into that. And then we eventually write all of that down. And at no point do we get into particular solutions. We just get into, it's just, here's the problem as you told us. Here's the problem as we understand it. Mm-hmm. Here's the process that we're going to use to figure out how to come up with a solution to that problem. Here's how long we think that'll take. And here's how much we think that'll cost. And by the way, if we get in there and we find out that something is more complex than either of us previously thought, we're going to talk about that price.
Yep. Do you include capabilities too in your proposals? Like, here's other things that we've done for other people that are similar to what you're doing, but not exactly the same.
Yeah.
Do you hypothesize in your proposals too? Like, it could be this, or do you leave that stuff out?
Nah, we don't get into that because
I've done really light versions of that before, but only to if the scope is kind of vague, and that is a way of like outlining what the concepts we're going to provide are.
Oh, nice.
I don't know what I just said. So it works sometimes.
So the reason we don't do that, you remember that poster that hung in Mulder's office in the X-Files, the I Want to Believe poster?
I didn't watch the X-Files.
Jesus Christ.
I can't watch scary television. Sorry. X-Files is too scary for me.
Anyway, clients want to believe. Clients want to get to those solutions. So if anything in the proposal even hints at a solution, they will cling to that.
Yeah. We've just done littler projects, like say an iOS icon design project, where we don't want the sky to be the limit. We know that like they have their logo, and we're either going to incorporate the mark that they already have and build that into an icon, or they have this other thing that they want to explore. So those are the two concepts that we will pursue as a part of that project.
Mm-hmm.
And if they want other concepts, then that is a change order.
Right.
So, you know, for there are some things where it does work. I wouldn't say like for website design, like if you're designing a publication, you would pigeonhole yourself like
we
that.
We also include any known constraints.
Yeah.
Like, so you've got style guidelines. Mm-hmm. Great. We're going to work within those.
Yeah.
You've got existing branding. We're going to work within that.
Mm-hmm.
You're in a .NET environment. We will cry, but we will work within that.
Yeah.
And here's also a set of things that we will not do.
Mm-hmm. Do you guys ever attach dates and like specific schedules to your proposals?
We, there's always the end date.
Yeah.
Because if you're working with a good client, they have a reason to end by a certain time.
Mm-hmm.
So it needs to launch by X date. Fantastic. Mm-hmm. That means that we're actually going to do this thing and that you're going to be paying attention while we do it so we can do it together.
I can't not include an end date because that's what controls scope.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, it's like we're going to, and I guess this gets closer to writing agreements as opposed to proposals, but somewhere in there, in the conversation with the client, we have to say, we're going to try and do this set of things. But we're also, if we reach this date, that date, even if we don't finish that set of things, we've got to be out of scope. You know, that's the scope of this agreement. We either finish this stuff first or we reach this date that's farther out. And if we reach that date and we're still not done, then we should talk about some changes.
Yeah, I've learned so much from Gabe Levine's contracts. I pretty much try and reiterate. I pretty much try and keep everything in the contract also in like the proposal part of it too, in friendlier terms, just so that everything is mirrored there. Because he has a lot of really good clauses that he puts into our contracts for client stuff. And for the clients that inevitably will sign an SOW without like really combing through the contract part of it and what it means, I think that's helped us with a lot of clients and their understanding of our responsibilities.
Do you have a lawyer, Dan?
Does every web design firm in the world use Gabe Levine?
Apparently. Except,
do you use Gabe?
I don't. What? Maybe I should.
Yeah.
Do you have
what
a
are
lawyer?
You doing with your life?
I do have my lawyer is a friend of mine that I went to high school with.
Oh, so. Shit.
Yeah. And I don't know what I would do without him.
Well, I'm sure he's great, but I'm sure he's no Gabe. He's no Gabe.
Probably not.
No, I'm sure he's fine.
Oh, I've heard a lot of good things about Gabe. My lawyer friend was actually like, hey, maybe I should get in touch with Gabe because he right now he does sort of general contract law. But he mm-hmm. wants to do design law specifically. Mm-hmm. So, and I was like, hey, there's a guy named Gabe that you should probably talk to. So maybe I'll ask you for an introduction at some point.
He probably should, because when we first met Gabe, he knew absolutely nothing about this whole internet thing.
And now he knows everything about it.
And everyone.
Yeah,
and it really is. I've never talked to Gabe about the people that we both know, because I feel like that's a weird thing for him. But like almost everybody I talk to who has a small business,
it comes
in San
out
Francisco.
In conversation.
Yeah, everybody works with Gabe.
And there's been a couple of odd interactions where I'm like, hey Gabe, I need you to do this for me, and he's like, I actually can't. I'm on both sides of this one.
Aww.
Like, God damn it. Who made
like
you famous?
CPA.
Who made you famous?
I don't know. Maybe the person who included him in talks and had a website called My Lawyer Gabe and included a podcast featuring Gabe on their radio network.
No, he's a great guy.
You birthed him.
He is.
So this week's
You're responsible.
This week's Twitter fight.
Mm-hmm.
I think we ironed out the spec work fight.
Yeah.
I think so.
I think we've reached an agreement.
So I still have,
we're all still friends, right?
Yeah.
Well, you know.
Well,
I like to stay after.
Have you ever met Jesse?
I'm not super friendly.
She lies.
I see what you did there.
I'm not a super friendly person. I come off
also
as mildly abrasive.
No, you don't.
I have t-shirts. I can send you.
Maybe not compared to you.
Please send Jesse a t-shirt.
What t-shirt?
I've never actually seen her wear a t-shirt.
I wear t-shirts all the time.
I've never seen you wear a t-shirt.
All right. Next week, I'm going to wear a t-shirt.
What do you wear instead? Do you wear like just button-up shirts all the time?
I'm wearing a dress today.
How many dresses do you own, Jesse?
I don't know anymore, Mike. I got rid of 30 of them.
Okay. If you got rid of 30 of them, that gives me a pretty good idea of how many you have.
No, yeah, it's under 100, over 50. I don't really know. It's somewhere in that bracket. 50 to 100? I don't know. I did just buy a new one today. I forgot to pick it up. Wow. Anyway.
Did you see
I'm that way with sneakers. I got rid of about 30 pairs of sneakers lately.
What?
Jesus.
I own 2 pairs of sneakers.
Oh man. I couldn't live that way.
One of them have glitter on them. Like there's the glitter sneakers.
Those. You're right. We might not be friends.
Well, we'll see. So Mike, what was your internet fight? Your Game of Thrones based internet fight. Did you spoil something?
So a character died.
Oh, big surprise. Game of Thrones.
Right?
Yeah.
And after the episode had aired, mm-hmm.
In what time zone?
West. Pacific time zone.
I'm just clarifying.
Pacific time zone.
Okay.
After I had seen it.
Uh-huh.
At the edge of the world.
Uh-huh.
I just tweeted an RIP with that character's name. And oh my God, shitstorm. Oh my God.
Is there a statute of limitation on spoilers? You know, what's the line?
There was like a College Humor or Funny or Die or one of those internet funny people videos about like the rules for that. I can't. They said so. It was like outrageous. I think that like they gave it like a week or like a month or something like that per episode. And then if it's a finale, it's like an entire year.
Okay, so here's a question.
What's your question?
You're in line mm-hmm. to see Apollo 13.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's not a realistic situation for me.
Fine, whatever. And as you're in line, people are exiting the theater from the previous showing.
Mm-hmm.
And you hear somebody say, "I'm so glad they made it back to Earth."
Mm-hmm.
Have they spoiled the movie for you?
Well, for me, I probably already looked up the ending before seeing the movie to see if it would be too stressful for me or not. But I do think that it is like slightly shitty if there's a person who's like about to watch that
movie. Oh my God, it's history, Jesse.
What?
It's history.
But I mean, like, if somebody's like sitting down reading a Harry Potter book and you're like, Dumbledore dies, like, that's,
that would be shitty.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, like, if you're in a movie theater passing by people who are like literally about to like enter that space and watch the movie, like, maybe wait until you're out of the movie theater. But if you're like on the sidewalk, just like smoking a cigarette, and you hear people like coming outside and chatting
Nobody
about it.
Nobody smokes cigarettes anymore, Jesse.
I'm sorry, vaping. Vaping an e-cig.
There you go.
I don't know.
Where's
like,
yours?
I don't have one. I think that the specific context in which you mentioned, where like you're in the movie theater and you're saying it around the people who are in line to see it right after.
All right,
you.
Another example.
Okay.
You're in line to see Titanic.
Mm-hmm.
And the person passing by goes, "The ship sank. Have you spoiled the movie?"
No.
Yet, a recent study showed that like an amazing percentage, I believe it was over 50.
Uh-huh.
Over 50% of the people who saw Titanic did not know how it was going to end.
Are you referring to the original release of Titanic or the 2012 three-dimensional?
The one that was just re-released.
Okay, but there was also like trending on Twitter like, OMG, Titanic was based on a real story?
Right.
So
okay, so maybe it wasn't a study, maybe it was a Twitter trend.
Yeah.
But you get the idea.
Yeah. Passion of the Christ. What happens at the end of that movie?
Yeah. That one's actually debatable, so.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, maybe people are expecting surprise endings. Like, in this version of Titanic, the ship actually just gets to its destination.
It's a transformer.
Yeah, I mean, in Inglourious Basterds, I think that they blow up Hitler, right?
It turns out the Titanic is a transformer.
Yeah.
It's Pacific Rim.
It was Battleship.
Nobody saw Battleship. That's not realistic.
No, I know.
Anyway.
We talked about this on an episode once.
I know. I'm just, it's it's still irritating.
But you're not going to do that anymore, right?
I'm not going to do that anymore because I made a pledge.
You did make a pledge.
And
was it worth it?
I got people to donate. It was worth it because I got people to donate $1,200
mm-hmm.
to a family on Small Can Be Big. And I said if they... If they met that goal, then I wouldn't spoil anything anymore.
Like ever again?
Ever again.
Wow.
It's not like I can't think of other terrible things
to do.
Do
you mean like publicly spoil or like at all? Like what about on a personal level, like around the office?
I said I won't spoil anything anymore. I need to treat that as generally as I said it.
All right.
Wow.
I like that.
I'm a man of my word.
I like my decided trend of spoiling via emoji because you're not really spoiling it unless the people have seen what you're talking about.
Sure. Hey, Dan.
Yes.
Thanks for being on our show today.
Thanks for having me on the show.
It was a delight.
It was delightful. Yeah. Thanks for putting up with us.
Oh, please. I'll put up with you anytime.
So sweet. Do you want to tell the people where they can find out more about you and stuff, like on Twitter and things like that?
Sure. Well, I am Daniel Maul on Twitter. My website is danielmaul.com. And the Super Friendly site is superfriend.ly, or you can follow Super Friendly Co. on Twitter.
All right. We will do that, and we hope that all of our listeners do as well. It was a good week. We actually talked about, you know, design related.
We talked about design stuff. This is why we should have guests, because when it's just me and you, we talk about TV.
Well, don't discount that. I enjoy listening to those shows.
By the way, stop. I had to write a comparative review this weekend, and I did it while watching 5 episodes of Vikings in a row. It actually worked really well.
Oh, I watched the first 4 episodes of The Good Wife.
Right? Am I right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Stick with that. Yeah. All right. Thanks, Dan.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Bye.